for a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best, and they're right up front with our $5,000 best price guarantee. That's right, Bill Curry will meet or beat any Ford dealer's best offer or give you $5,000 cash. Shop our huge selection of new Fords, then get the lowest price, the best price, or we'll give you $5,000 cash. Only at Bill Curry Ford, located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. It's the Week 11 edition of the show. I am Bobby Fenton. The Bucks get a win against the Cardinals on Sunday, move themselves to 3-6 on the season, and set up, well, I'm not going to call it a showdown, but set up another home game against the Saints on Sunday at 1 o'clock. That game will be on Fox. We'll talk all about it today. We'll talk about the win over the Cardinals. We'll talk about a bunch of things. There's a lot going on both with the Buccaneers and around the league, so it should be a pretty fun show this week. And, of course, it's always nice to do one coming off of a win. As I said, the Free Stretch is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. You know, Thanksgiving's in a couple of weeks, but it's pretty much already Black Friday at Bill Curry Ford. Again, go to the website just to start out, like an introductory thing. Check it out, BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E. You'll see all the inventory there. And then they've got, you know, whether it's new, whether it's pre-owned certified stuff, whether it's used, tons of cars and trucks, Fords and otherwise. And Bill Curry Ford's the only one of all of these places giving you the nationwide lifetime warranty. Unlimited years, unlimited miles. You get a car from them and you have engine trouble down the road, something like that, they'll cover it, okay? Even if you've had the car for a while, as long as you're the one that still owns it, Bill Curry Ford will cover it. And that is something you won't get anywhere else. That's in addition to 10 years of roadside service, 1 year of free service with your oil changes and all that. You get all these things at Bill Curry Ford. So go to the website, BillCurryFord.com, or check them out in person a mile north of Raymond James Stadium there on Dale Mabry, where they've always been, just north of the Hillsboro Interchange there on the east side of the road. And go see Sean Sullivan, good friend of the show. Mention the Joe Bucks Fan website or the Free Stretch, you'll get the Joe Bucks Fan discount. So the Bucks played the Cardinals on Sunday, and we said last week, I thought it was a decent spot for the Bucks. Thought they could put up some points on a Cardinals secondary that has had some issues. They only had two interceptions all year, by far the fewest in the league going into that game. And while the Bucks were unfortunately able to match that, Jameis Winston throwing a couple of picks, he also got him in the end zone when they needed to be there and led a fourth quarter comeback for whatever that's worth, and the Bucks end up winning the football game 30-27. Now, I hate to be like Debbie Downer, but watching the game on Sunday was difficult for me, and this happens every year, unfortunately, the way things have gone the past decade. But, you know, that was an exciting game. It was back and forth. That was the kind of game that I would have been on pins and needles, but the good kind of pins and needles, like that fun, hey, we don't know what's going to happen, roller coaster of emotion type feeling, if it was a game with any type of playoff implications. But I found it difficult to get excited because the team came into the game 2-6 with almost no hope. I mean, technically, mathematically, they're still alive, but only in the strictest sense of technically do I mean that. And so, you know, you always look for things. You want to see progress. You want to get excited. But ultimately, it's just that empty feeling. And they won the game. They go to 3-6. I'm going to be at the game on Sunday with some family members for the Saints. And it's always a little more exciting when you're at the game. But man, it'd be nice if they were like, you know, 5-4 right now or something like that. And this was a high leverage, you know, playoff percentage type game where your odds of making the playoffs swing wildly from winning to losing. You know, that's the fun of November and December football in the NFL. And we've had a little taste of it in 2016 and before that, 2010. But that's really it. Think about that. So, watching the game, here are my impressions. I'll start with the positive stuff. Because Jamel Dean made a big play. And, you know, he got picked on last week. He got thrust into that role with Carlton Davis hurting his hip. And he got lit up a little bit, or really a lot, against the Seahawks. So he plays a good game, more pass breakups, and of course the thing everybody's going to remember is the big interception when the Cardinals were driving the ball, and that interception got the Bucs back in business, gave them a chance to drive downfield and go make a few plays and take the lead. I actually thought it was in real time. I still haven't seen a great replay of it that told the tale for sure, but I thought he knocked down the receiver to get that interception. I thought it was pass interference, but there was no call. And again, the receiver may have just fallen. It was hard to tell. But either way, Jamel Dean stepped up, made a play, and the Buccaneers get a takeaway at a huge moment. And like I said, they have a chance to go down and take the lead, which they do. They're going to need Jamel Dean to keep improving because, of course, the big news this week, Vernon Hargraves released by the Buccaneers. Actually, he was waived and claimed off of waivers by the Texans. So now you're looking at a starting secondary this weekend, and they're already going to be without Carlton Davis because of the hip injury, which, well, I shouldn't say that. As of right now, I'm doing this on midday. It's like late morning. I'm recording this on Thursday. At practice today, Carlton Davis was back. He hadn't been there all week, but he was limited. So I can't say he's out yet, although it doesn't look like he's 100%. He's not officially out as of right now. But either way, as far as who they're really going to be relying on Sunday, their foursome, the two corners and the two safeties, are going to probably be Sean Murphy Bunting, Jamel Dean, Mike Edwards, and Jordan Whitehead at safety. That's four guys who are all 23 years old or younger and all very, very green, but getting better, we'd like to think. And this is going up against an offense in Drew Brees and Michael Thomas, who have coming off a terrible loss to the Falcons, which does not help the Bucs in any way, by the way. I would have rather the Saints won. But they got lit up. They gave up a million sacks. They couldn't get anything going. They did not score a touchdown. They eliminated me from my survivor pool, damn it. And so for that reason alone, I hope the Bucs beat them by 1,000 points this weekend, because screw them. But either way, it's going to be a test, what happened against the Falcons for New Orleans notwithstanding. And, you know, we'll see if these kids are up for it. Hopefully they are. Again, they've been improving, but right now it doesn't look like Carlton Davis is going to be able to get back in the mix. But Jamel Dean was very good. Vita Vea was his usual self. He was moving bodies both on offense and defense this time. He was playing a little offense there in that goal line set where the Bucs got the winning touchdown. Levante David, if there's an unsung guy on the Bucs defense that we just take for granted, it's him. I mean, we all know he's good, but I was even thinking about this. Like, how often do I talk about Levante David on this show? And I don't bring his name up that much. Like, I'm always picking on, or not picking on, but bringing up, you know, like I said, people in the secondary, some younger guys. We focus a lot on the pass rush. And Levante David, just a guy we set our watch to, but he is a stud, had a big forced fumble and recovery. By the way, he's got 14 fumble recoveries now, career, which is the all-time Bucs franchise leader there. He passed Derek Brooks for that, I believe, with that one on Sunday. And here's another stat that Scott Smith of the Buccaneers tweeted out, which was amazing. But Levante David has not a single penalty called on him. And this is a guy who plays a position where you could commit a few penalties, whether it's defensive holding or whether it's involved with the way you tackle, or who knows. Pass interference is a possibility. He hasn't committed a penalty since 2017. He's the only guy to have actually played at least a certain number of snaps in that time. Besides Eric Weddle, he and Eric Weddle are the only guys to have played consistently for that many years and not had a penalty in that time. And in fact, Levante David only has 6 penalties called on him ever in his NFL career, which spans over 8,000 snaps of live football. And again, I don't say enough. I don't say a lot about Levante David on this show, but, and, you know, it's just a shame that it's like a lot of other good players. Like, you know, you have guys that you draft and you hope they turn out, and when they do, you point to them as reasons for your team's success. But what about if a guy, and Gerald McCoy was a lot like this too, but what about when a guy just plays his career on a team that never, I mean, literally never does anything of note to anybody outside of like that team's fan base? Like, nobody cares. You know, the Bucs are never playing in anything important, and they're never in contention for anything. It sucks, because Levante David is exactly what the Bucs bargained for and more when they got him, and he was fantastic on Sunday as well. So some good things there. As far as running backs, it was good to see Peyton Barber contribute, and he, you know, Ronald Jones had a fumble in the second half that was kind of big and hurt the Bucs. Peyton Barber had 39 second-half yards. Of course, he had the touchdown. He's not going to usurp Ronald Jones anytime soon, the way Jones usurped him in his role, basically. And DVOA still bears it out. Ronald Jones is 12th in the NFL in DVOA, and Peyton Barber is 29th. But at any given time, you can use either one. And it really goes back to what's been proven time and time again with running backs in the NFL, that the individual matters much less than the offensive line for that team, the scheme on any given play, the holes that are there or not there. I mean, again, certain guys can make plays better than others from time to time, but there's a lot more randomness with the actual guy playing running back, whoever it is, and they're much more interchangeable than some people want to give credit for, although a lot of people are coming around on that right now. So either way, those were my impressions of Sunday. Good to see the Bucs get the win. Good to see Jameis Winston take them downfield. Got a couple favorable penalties there. The PI in the end zone helped, but whatever, they got it done. And so now we move on for a second consecutive home game, and that'll be against the Saints on Sunday at 1. If you want to get a hold of me, I love hearing from you guys. Email me. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. That's BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. And on Twitter, same thing, @BobbyGameDay. The Bucks will be in their all-red color rush unis on Sunday, for whatever that's worth. And I don't think it's much, but, you know, like I always say about those uniforms, they're definitely not good. But after you see the Bucks in their regular uniforms so often, anything seems better. And so, you know, at the end of the day, it's hard to do much worse than the regular uniforms. Some people like to have something different. This will be your chance. It's also Salute to Service Day. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to the game. Like I said, I go as a fan a lot. I don't go up in the press box much anymore as a credentialed member of the media. And, you know, I love all the food they have up there. I love the Bananas Foster at halftime. But I love sitting in the stands. Actually, I don't usually sit in the stands. I usually stand in the end zone, like I've told you guys before. I like to stand at the railings in the end zone because I don't like to sit for football games. I like to stand up, and I like to be able to just kind of lean on the railing if I need to. And I like to watch the Bucks play. No matter how old I get and no matter what the Bucks record is for these games, it always makes me feel like I'm a kid again, especially when they're bad like this, because that actually was what it's like when I was a kid. You know, every game I went to in the 80s and 90s seemed to have a 3-6 or a 2-7 Bucks team going against some other team. But the difference was, and this is why I like to do these things in person, I'm taking my kids on Sunday, it'll be fun. The difference was, when I was a kid, I didn't know what the Bucks record was, or I might have known, but I didn't care. And to me, every Bucks game felt like the Super Bowl. Like, if you went and took 12-year-old Bobby Fenton, or not even 12, maybe 10-year-old Bobby Fenton, to a Bucks game back in 1990, and the Bucks were 2-8 going into that game, I was rooting for them to win that game just as hard as I do now as an adult when they're in a playoff game or something like that. Whereas, like I just told you, watching that game on Sunday, I was like, yeah, hey, whatever, good win. Hope they come back. You know, I was watching the fourth quarter. I was just sitting on my couch and just really not, like, feeling it, you know? And that's because I'm older now. I'm jaded. I hate being jaded, but I'm jaded. Now, I make wisecrack remarks, and I make fun of bad plays and this, that, and the other. And it was just so much more pure when I was a kid. But I think being there in person brings that back out of me. When I'm watching on TV, I'm like, whatever, we suck. We're not going to the playoffs for the umpteenth consecutive year. And I sit there and pout like a big baby, basically, because I'm mad that they're not playing important games in November and December, which is what I want every year, first and foremost. There's always a list of goals you have. The number one goal every year, give me some high-leverage playoff drama in November and December. And when they fail that first basic goal, everything else behind it, obviously, is unaccomplishable as well. So I sit and pout. But when I'm at the game in person, I don't pout as much. I just get into it. I start feeling it. Maybe it's the roar of the crowd, albeit not as big as we'd like. And maybe it's just, like I said, bringing back memories from when I was a kid. Maybe it's seeing things through my own kids' eyes, because they're the same way I was when I was their age. But I love it. So I'm looking forward to Sunday, win, lose, or draw, no matter what the Bucks record is. You know, John Romano, in his Monday column about the Bucks game on Sunday, he did like a bullet point thing where he goes over certain aspects. And one of the things he said about Sunday's game, he pointed out the crowd, which was a little over 40,000. That's the lowest in 23 years for the Bucks, going back to 1996 at the Sombrero. I don't know which game it was, but the point is, that's the lowest one they've had at Raymond James Stadium. And he went on to, you know, do a whole little bit about the attendance, which most of us were already sick of hearing about the Rays. But at least with the Rays, they're good, and that's what spurs all these attendance takes. But he said, to cap that little section of his column, I quote, "Surely this has not escaped ownership's attention." And I love Romano. I love his writing. He's a valuable asset. He's been so good with both sports and non-sports stuff. He's gone back and forth over at the Tampa Bay Times. "But surely this has not escaped ownership's attention." Let me tell you what hasn't escaped Bucks fans' attention, okay? Last place finishes 7 of the last 8 years, okay? And possibly, whether the Falcons might have something to say about it, but possibly on their way to another win this year. 8 losing seasons in the last 10 years, very likely about to be 9 in the last 11 seasons, and a home record since they fired John Gruden in 2008 after going 9-7 when they were 9-2 at one point that season. They fired John Gruden, and since then, okay, they are 29-51 at home at Raymond James Stadium. It's actually 29-54 counting all home games, but 3 London games were not really home games. But just at Raymond James Stadium since 2009, okay, they're 29-51. So those things haven't gone unnoticed by me and by most of the Bucks fan base. So I understand that the norm around the league is for a number maybe a little higher than that, regardless of how poor the team is performing. I mean, like he, you know, said, Oakland is a lame duck team that's about to move, and they're getting a few more, although they are, of course, still playing in important games. But the point is, the numbers I just gave you, the state of this franchise, not just this year, but for a decade running, we ought to find out. It's just like in Bull Durham when he says, "What's our record?" And the assistant coach goes, 8-16. He goes, 8-16. How do we ever win 8? We ought to do some market research on how in the hell we got 40,000 people to go to the games. That's really good, I think, considering what the Bucks have been doing over the past many, 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 many years, okay? Now, I don't know what the attendance will be on this weekend's game. I know that we're playing the Saints. There's a little more proximity there. It's a division game. You know, the weather's supposed to be pretty nice. It's been cooling off a little bit. Whatever. I mean, maybe it'll be more than that, but it won't be much more. And you can count me and my family as a few more. And I'm looking forward to it. But again, I mean, you know, there's reasons why you go to watch the game, I guess. And some people just purely go for the spectacle. They want to see players playing football. They want to see people performing at a high level. And situationally, it doesn't matter as much to them. Like, they don't know, oh, well, this is a game that's important in the wild card race, and so-and-so needs this game, their record will be this. Some people don't think that way. Some people strictly look at this as going to a football game the same way you go to see a movie. It's just an entertainment option that they avail themselves of sometimes, or sometimes they do other things. And then most people, though, look at these games in terms of stakes. What are the stakes? The bigger the stakes, the more excited people are going to be. The Bucks in the late 90s and early 2000s had every game sold out, and they had a waiting list of 1 million people, not because people just liked football more back then than they do now. People still love football. It was because those games all had stakes. Every one of those games had playoff implications. The Bucks were chasing a Super Bowl perennially, and they were always in the playoffs, and sometimes they'd come up short and lose to the Eagles in the first round, and finally, they'd, you know, sometimes they'd break through and win and get to the conference championship and lose to the Rams, but then they finally won it. But either way, all those games mattered, and they had Monday night games, and they had Sunday night games, and they had 4 o'clock games, and they had plenty of Sunday at 1 games, and plenty of them were hot, and plenty of them were in nice weather. And either way, none of it ever mattered, because what really matters at the end of the day are stakes. And when's the last time we had a big game at Raymond James? Like, hey, we got lots on the line today. This game could determine the outcome of our season. You know, like I said, 2016 was a little bit like that. That was 3 years ago. But even then, you never got the feeling that that was a real, like, legitimate Bucks team that was going to go anywhere. They finished 9-7, missed the playoffs on a tiebreaker, and whatever. Point is, like, we don't have that now. So that's the part that I miss. More than anything else, I crave it again. It's been so long. We're not getting it now, but we shouldn't be doing it. Don't give me, oh, the Glazers are going to be unhappy about that. The Glazers need to figure out how the hell to run a football team properly before they start. And I'm not saying they've said anything, but for Romano to say, oh, that did not go unnoticed by the Glazers. He might be right. I mean, I'm not saying Romano's wrong, but there's a lot of things that go unnoticed by me all the time about the Bucks, and you too if you listen to this show. So anyway, I look forward to seeing Drew Brees and company come in here and the young Bucs secondary. If you're looking for like reasons to get excited, let's see if these kids can shut his ass down. Let's see if these kids can take it to him. You know, he's good, especially coming off a loss like they are. Like I said, I don't think that helps us in any way, but I expect to see a better game from the Saints than you got on Sunday, because that's how this league works and that's how sports works in general. But yeah, let's see. Let's see if Jamel Dean can continue his upward improvement from one week to the next. Let's see if Murphy Bunting can be a starting, you know, can we say, hey, we drafted a guy, now he's a starting corner for us in the NFL. This guy that we, you know, the Bucs have used. Let's look at what they've done. You know, people made a big deal this week when they cut Hargraves about the 2016 draft, because they have literally nothing left except, I think, Ryan Smith. And they did get something out of some of those guys. I mean, it's not like they were all terrible all the time. I mean, Benenock played for a while, you know, and they got some other depth guys. And in the bottom half of these drafts, you can't expect much more than that. But overall, the 2016 draft seems like a fairly lost cause. It's worth and it's fair to point out that the 2016 draft was not a great draft in general, and lots of teams don't have much to show for that draft at this point, and that goes for both good and bad teams. So it isn't just the Bucs, but either way, they drafted Hargraves in that draft in the first round. He's gone now. Overall, the past 4 years of drafts, 16, 17, 18, and 19, all right, the Bucs have used, on their secondary alone, one first-round pick, which was Hargraves, four second-round picks, two third-round picks, and two fourth-round picks. So they've invested heavily in the secondary, and even despite doing that, on Sunday, they're going to trot out pretty much what they could have trotted out if they had only focused on this draft or that position, you know, half as much or even a third as much as they did. And you know what? There's no use dwelling on it. They can't go back in time. You know, maybe these four guys or maybe three of these four guys can be ball players. But again, looking at that 2016 draft, I'm looking at it now. Of course, you had the quarterbacks, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz go 1-2, Joey Bosa 3 to the Chargers. He's all right. Ezekiel Elliott is overrated. He was the fourth pick. Jalen Ramsey's already on his second team, the fifth pick. And then once you get past that, I mean, I'm looking at all these names that were down there, and the Bucs picked 11th that year when they took Hargraves. Eli Apple, meh. Jack Conklin, Ronnie Stanley, Sheldon Rankins, Laramie Tunsil, another guy who's not on his original team. Keanu Neal for the Falcons has made a Pro Bowl at 17. That's one I guess the Bucs could have done. You know, it's just not that, it wasn't that great of a draft. It just wasn't that. In some years that happens for everybody. I'm not about dwelling on it anymore, but you know, where we are now is all that matters. I do want to thank the Texans. They were the only team that put in a waiver claim for Hargraves, because if he didn't get claimed and the Bucs just had to end up outright releasing him, you know, as it is, the Texans actually get his contract, so the Bucs can wash their hands of everything. Whereas if Hargraves hadn't been claimed, the Bucs would be on the hook for what was left of his 2019 salary, which is $930,000. So, you know, again, not that it's not my money, but still, a little savings for the Bucs there. And it's even more interesting because, you know, he has that $10 million option for 2020, which is not guaranteed. The Bucs wouldn't have had to take that, but it is guaranteed in terms of injury. So if he gets hurt for the Texans, I mean, they have to pay him $10 million next year, no matter what. And it's not a huge risk that he'd be hurt so badly that he wouldn't be able to contribute next year anyway, but it's the NFL, so there's always a chance that something could happen. So again, thanks to the Texans for taking that whole thing off our hands. But you know, if nothing else, maybe Bruce Arians sends a little bit more of an accountability message to the rest of the locker room, gets some guys' attention, name your cliche, anything like that. Oh, one more thing I want to say about Arians, just to go back to the game on Sunday against Arizona. I was a little unhappy, and I know he said afterward that he did it on purpose because he wanted to make a point, and he was pissed off the referees and wanted to make sure everybody had to stop the game for a second and acknowledge that there was another bad call made. But, you know, challenging when you don't have a challenge, burning a timeout, stuff like that. Stop with the theatrics and the circus stuff. Again, we just continually look like a team, and it's unfair to do it because I guess nobody does these things the right way. But I think of, like, who are the best coach teams in the league? I mean, obviously the Patriots When you look at the Patriots, they're one of them. But the Ravens, you know, some other ones, just teams that don't screw around, don't do stupid stuff, and know exactly what in the hell they're doing at all times. I try to imagine them doing stuff that we do. And, you know, again, stop it, man. Like, be organized down there. I like detail-oriented coaches, which, I mean, coaches by nature are detail-oriented, but I like when coaches are, like, just whip smart with the rules, know exactly what's going on, know exactly what's going on with strategies and probabilities and fourth down usage and all these different things. You know, beyond just the X's and O's and stuff like that, like, that's, to me, a very important thing with a head coach. And it seems like every week we're doing something dumb or we're doing something that goes against common sense. We're doing something that, again, just lessens our chances of winning the game. And I know Arian said, oh, I don't care about the rule about losing a timeout. I threw that challenge flag even though I didn't have one just because it's so dumb. But hey, fine, we get it, okay? The referees missed some calls, and they did. And you also shouldn't have challenged some calls that you did, again. But I want that tightened up. I really do. I mean, I know Bruce Arians is, I'm not going to call him a figurehead, but he's older now. He's got a crop of young assistants like Leftwich and like Todd Bolt, and they're trying to do things, you know, and he's trying to let them. Okay, but you're the head coach of the football team, so you're the ultimate one who makes these decisions and makes these calls. Tighten that stuff up, please. You know, I want us to look like a competent outfit. We may not have good enough players. I get that. Believe me, we've done whole shows on that so far this year. And you're going to lose probably more than you win just because you don't have good enough players. But let's start tightening up the other things that we can control, and let's maximize the whole operation here. Let's streamline it. You know, I used to love the show The West Wing on, I guess it was NBC at the time, but I used to love that show. And there's one scene, I'm not going to bore you with West Wing stuff, there's one scene where the president, he's running for re-election, and he has his campaign manager who's on staff, and he finds a poll on his desk accidentally that the campaign guy like left on his desk, and the poll is about where should the president's family go for Thanksgiving, like what location for their vacation polled best for some holiday, whether it was Christmas or Thanksgiving, and the president's like, what is this? This is my personal life. I don't want to poll out there about where I go on vacation, stuff like this. This is totally unnecessary, and this is personal. And the pollster says, hey, look, if you want a guy who's going to leave stones unturned, go get someone else. He's like, I like sailing. And when I sail, he's like, if I notice a little piece of kelp stuck to the side of the boat, all right, reducing drag by 1/1000th of a mile an hour over the course, he's like, that's going to bother me. I'm going to take care of that. So if you want somebody that doesn't, you know, worry about little things like that, go get someone else. But if you want me to run your campaign, he's like, we're going to get into every single thing. And that's how it should be with a football coach. I mean, to the last detail. And it just seems like we're real just fast and loose with a lot of stuff like that. And I don't care for it. I just want to go on. I'm not saying it's the reason we've won or lost any specific game, although it is the reason we've won or lost specific games. That's not my point right now. My point is, all told, to me it's not a good look, and it's something that when I look at this coaching staff and I try to say, okay, well, it's their first year. They haven't had this team for a long time. They're still only 9 games in. Personnel-wise, the team was a mess when they got here, and they're still working through all that. Yes, yes, and yes, but they're also not doing the little things right, and the little things are really important. In fact, they're all that's important right now because, like I've done, I said 2 shows ago, how can we expect to do the little or the big things if we can't do the little things first? And we're not doing them. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. Another thing I wanted to get to on the show this week, there was a report out there that a source close to the negotiations between the players and the NFL was saying, hey, we're close to a new CBA. The agreement's going to be done before the Super Bowl. There's going to be 17 regular season games. There's going to be possibly 14 playoff teams instead of 12, so 7 from each conference instead of 6, and 1 first round bye instead of 2, and on and on and on. They're going to cut the preseason from 4 games to 3 or maybe even 2, and all these different things. So that source, according to ProFootballTalk.com, is from the league side. I'm quoting a story that came out earlier today. Someone from the league office apparently wants to create the impression that a new labor deal, which would include a 17-game season, is close between the NFL and the NFL Players Association. But someone from the other side of the bargaining table begs to differ with, or per a source with knowledge of the union's perspective on the negotiations. A new CBA is not close. The report was from Mark Mask, or it might be Maskey, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing it, from the Washington Post. He suggested that the new deal could come in early 2020, but the other source is saying that a deal before the Super Bowl is highly unlikely and that the current working deadline is for the start of the new league year in March 2020. Now, whether it's early 2020 or after the Super Bowl, March 2020, it does sound, and we've talked about this already, you know, they wanted the 18-game season. That was the drum they were beating all along. 18 games, let's go down to two preseason games. It's still 20 total games. And everybody said, no, no, no. How can you say you're for player safety if you're going to do this? And, you know, there's all these different concessions and things like that that were going back and forth. It's possible they really did want 18 and just had to compromise at 17. And it's possible they thought 17 was going to be what it was all along. And you know how you come out with something over the top because you know it'll get negotiated back down. And so maybe they're getting exactly what they want. Either way, I think, I mean, this is nothing new. This story doesn't change anything. We already knew we should probably start preparing ourselves for a different-looking NFL. I'm not sure how much different the league will look when you add a 17th regular season game. And it's not clear yet what they're going to do, if they're simply going to add another week, and now you have 17 games, or if they're going to add two more weeks and add a second bye week, which would get the season up to, you'd have a week 19 at that point. And that certainly is something that could be considered a concession if you're going to talk about player safety. And then are they doing three preseason games? Are they doing two? Again, I'm not sure. I don't like the idea of changing much because I think the NFL is perfect the way it is. But if you're going to change something, what I think will be more of a shock to the system would be the 17th, or excuse me, the adding the two playoff teams, 14 playoff teams. Then you'd go 1 through 7 in each conference instead of 1 through 6, and now you'd have 3 wild card games on each side. You'd have 6 games on wild card weekend instead of 4, and you'd have only the top seed, the number 1 team with a first round bye. Number 2 would play number 7, number 3 would play number 6, and 4 would still play 5. So basically you're adding number 2 versus number 7 in a first round playoff game and making that number 2 team play the extra game. And then you'd still be down to 1 through 4 or what, you know, whatever the seeds are. But you'd have 4 teams for divisional playoff weekend, 2 for the conference championships. And so you're basically just adding 2 playoff games to wild card weekend. And there's even talk there could be one on Monday night. Now, I look at the standings every year. And again, and Joe brought this up. If you go to the, there was a piece on Joe Bucks Fan here he put up earlier this morning after this news came out. He said, Joe loves anything that might help the Bucks end their depressing playoff drought. And yeah, I guess that's one way to look at it. But he says that the NFL, you know, being likely to avoid another lockout by doing this. He says Joe loves the expanded postseason because there are too many tiebreakers now. And anything that might help the Bucks snap this January funk, hey, bring it on. You can never have too much hope. And, you know, obviously whenever you expand playoffs, and I complained about it a little bit when baseball did it with the wild card, but that extra wild card is what kept... And not that I guess it would have been any different this particular year, but it kept things interesting with the Rays and the Indians and the A's all the way down the stretch. You know, the Rays would have finished behind the A's and not had a chance to play that wild card game before they added a second wild card. Of course, if they only had one wild card, the games might have played out differently because the Rays clinched on Friday and they played a couple games without really needing to win. So anyway, I don't know how it would have gone, but point is, yes, you will bring more teams into the fold. Do I want to see 8 and 9 teams in which you'd have a 17-game schedule? Do I want to see 8 and 9 teams in the playoffs? No. Even 9 and 8, I think, is a little shaky. I like the way the NFL is set up now in that usually 10 and 6 gets you in, which it should. And this isn't a hard and fast rule, but 10 and 6 gets you in. 9 and 7 means you could get in, but you can't rely on it, and you might have to get some help. And 8 and 8 means you don't get in. I think that's about right. And, you know, I don't think that it's a bad thing to have extra 2 playoff games. I mean, you know me. I always talk about how much I love football. We all do, or we wouldn't be here. And I think wild card weekend could be tons of fun with 2 extra games. of course, but, you know, what was the term? Pigs get fat, but hogs get slaughtered. Like, I worry about you making this stuff too big, and then it loses some of its zip. And, you know, I think the NFL is okay. I mean, they're definitely on the right side of that line right now. Would they still be okay if they did this? It's hard to say until you see it in action. It's kind of like college football playoff proposals. Everybody's got their own proposal. 4 teams, 8 teams, 6 teams, 16. And I have thoughts on every one of them and what I think would be good and what wouldn't be good. But until they actually happen and you get to let it play out for a few years and see it as a fan, it's hard to say. But I would say this. I mean, we know what the owners want. And what they want, they usually get at least some of, if not all of. There's going to be expansion of some kind. And the 17th regular season game, again, I'm all for more football. I've told you this before, too. I mean, we need more football, okay? But the player safety is an issue. So how do you get to make more money by not adding any games? If you remember, if you've listened to the show, I said this during the offseason, I think. And this is not my original idea, but I can't remember whose it is. But if you simply add another bye week to the thing, same amount of games, everybody plays 16, and now you have 2 bye weeks, what do you have? An extra week of the TV contracts, another week that you can make more money off of that. And I know that might not be quite as much money as adding 16 more total games. Although, again, you're only adding another week to the inventory that way, too. And you're adding, you know, what you are getting is ticket revenue that you wouldn't get with an extra game. But, I mean, come on, like, play 16 games and have 2 off weeks. Now you have 18 weeks. And now you have the same amount of games, but now you have more TV windows. That's one more Thursday night slot, one more Monday night slot, and one more Sunday night slot, one more 4 p.m. national slot on Sunday. You know, the thing about the NFL, like, we have these games, but you don't get to see that many of them. You get to see the select national games. The NFL hides a lot of its games. So what if we spread the schedule out more thinly, and you have the same games, but you just have more that people can watch now? You know, college football, every single game that's played by a Division I team is on television. And I love that about college football. I mean, if there's a game going on, you can find a way to watch it. And they're not always on network TV or anything like that, but they're all televised. And, of course, I know the NFL has Red Zone, but, you know, usually if you're a viewer at home, like this week, you get your Thursday night game, which will be fun. You know, tonight is it's Browns Steelers, I meant to say. And you get your Sunday and your Monday and all that. But then 1 o'clock on Sunday, you get one, maybe two. And if not two in that slot, you get two in the 4 o'clock. You get 3 games on Sundays, basically, not in the primetime slot. And I wish there was ways to see more of the games. I really do. And I think you could, again, get more games on TV, get more money and all that stuff without adding that 17th game. I'm not naive enough to think that this is going to fly with the owners, because you could still get even more with more games, and we know where it's going. But just prepare yourselves for a different-looking NFL. And it doesn't say when this will happen. They might not do this right away. Even if they agree to it in the CBA, it could be phased in. You know, it might not be necessarily 2020. I don't know how they would handle the extra game. Is the other thing is the schedule formula. They have a nice, neat schedule formula right now where you play your own division for 6 games, 3 home, 3 away. You play another division in your conference for 4 games. That's 10. You play another division in the other conference, that's 14, and the other 2 are for the 2 divisions in your own conference you don't play, matched up with what place you finish. So what would the 17th game be? It could be, maybe they try to create almost like interleague play in baseball. They partner you up with a rivalry team, like the Bucks would play the Dolphins every year now, and, you know, something like that. I have no idea, but I'm sure they could figure it out, and either way, it's not going to be a barrier to them doing this, but just something to keep an eye on. Then there's the Colin Kaepernick thing, which at this point, it looks like the league has done themselves backing themselves into another PR error completely of their own doing. And Roger Goodell makes $30 million a year, by the way. So it's amazing to me how the NFL can continually mess up simple things. They try to do this Kaepernick thing. They put it at an inconvenient time, in an inconvenient place, give nobody any notice, and then when there's backlash, they're doing damage control on something that they just completely of their own doing. But at the end of the day, Kaepernick's going to get a workout in front of at least some teams, And the reason supposedly this happened is because some teams have asked about him and the NFL thought, hey, let's set it up so that we can get it all done in one place and teams can come watch him work out. And is the whole thing possibly contrived? Is it possibly set up so the NFL can say, see, we gave him a chance, didn't work out? You know, of course. But there's also, to me, a greater possibility now than there was a week ago that Colin Kaepernick might be on an NFL roster at some point. I don't think it's that big of a deal that he would be. I think that's part of the problem, is everybody thinks it'd be such a big deal to have him on your team and the intense media scrutiny and no one wants to take this chance. I don't think it's that big of a deal to kneel for an anthem or any song. I don't think it's a big deal if he gets signed by somebody. But seeing as he was clearly and obviously blackballed from the league for an extended period of time, it's story worthy. We'll keep an eye on it here on the Free Stretch. So that wraps things up for this week's show. I want to thank the Joes, as always, for giving me this platform. This website is the number one place anywhere on the internet for Buccaneer coverage, and it is a privilege to get in front of all of you every week. I want to thank all of you for listening. Thanks to our sponsors at Bill Curry Ford. Hey, have some fun this weekend. If you guys are going to go to the game, anybody who's going to the game, look for me. I'll be somewhere probably in the upper deck on the west side. So if you see a bald guy, jacked stud with a deep voice, that's me. All right, come say hello. I'll be with my family, just hanging out and probably spreading out a little bit with all the room we have.
He's not really that jacked.
No, that's my son weighing in there. But anyway, have a great weekend, whether you're going to the game or not. It's Buccaneer football. We only get 16 of these a year, and there's only 7 precious ones left. So no matter what the team's record is, let's enjoy it. Let's see if they can throw a little monkey wrench into the Saints' plans and mess things up in the NFC South a little bit. In the meantime, I'll be back next week. That is the Week 11 edition of the Free Stretch. Wherever you are, folks, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.